for your March Madness fix.
Puck, baseline, up for the shot, dive, off the glass, the game is over.
Gonzaga, the slipper still fits.
It's over. Michigan has won a national championship.
I got a feeling.
Holy mackerel, holy mackerel.
Tonight's gonna be a good night.
The shot.
Yes!
It's the shot by Tate Jordan. Wins it.
Williams could tie it with a three. He does.
Smart takes the shot. Indiana wins the championship. So now Valpo's going to have to go the length of the court. It's to Jenkins, to Drew for the win. Gone.
Oh!
Nice, Drew did it. Valpo has won the game. A miracle.
One shining moment.
Wittenberg. Oh, it's a long way.
Pass to Leitner. Puts it up.
Yes! Kamara gets it ahead. Cooper out in front of everybody. Gives it to Katie Douglas. Her shot is up. No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
He brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. On the Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT. Eric Hansen in our WSBT studios, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT radio sports director Darren Pritchett with the Fighting Irish hockey team. We are in Bridgeport, Connecticut, getting set for tomorrow's NCAA tournament East Regional semifinal, featuring the top-seeded Fighting Irish and the four-seed Michigan Tech. You will be able to hear that game on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. The opening face-off at 3 o'clock. Pre-game coverage will start at 2:45, once again on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. At about 6:40 tonight, we're going to play back our conversation with Fighting Irish head coach Jeff Jackson to get you in the NCAA hockey tournament mood. So that's going to take place right around 6:40. But we have a lot of football to get to coming up this hour. Pro Day was today. We'll have Tyler James with his Fighting Irish football recruiting insider report. Tyler, of course, covers Fighting Irish football recruiting for the South Bend Tribune. Tyler will join us in about 19 minutes. My five question of the day, Eric's five biggest observations or storylines from Notre Dame Pro Day. And then next hour, we'll talk about the NCAA men's basketball tournament. We'll have rapid fire. Sean has put together some audio from the coordinators visiting with the media today. So Clark Lee, Chip Long, the defensive and offensive coordinators for the Fighting Irish, hear from them in just about an hour and 15 minutes. And then that Jeff Jackson interview will wrap up the program. It's been a very busy day for Eric Hansen covering practice, pro day. So have you had a chance to catch your breath yet?
I am now. It's been a lot of information, a lot of interesting. It's really an interesting day, Darren. It's one of the days you kind of feel really fortunate to be in this business. Got to watch a full practice as part of the coaching clinic this morning. Learned a lot more about this current Notre Dame team. Had a chance to speak with all the coordinators, including special teams coordinator Brian Polian. Mm-hmm. And then we also talked to defensive line coach Mike Elston, who's the associate head coach. And then we got to watch Pro Day. And so lots of, you know, there's some days the news kind of trickles in, and today's one of those days where it kind of is like a fire hose.
Interesting. Well, I'm not sure where to start then, because I didn't realize some of the things you got to do today. Being on the road, I'm kind of cut off from a lot of the things happening with the football team today. So I'm going to be like a listener. I'm just going to ask you a lot of questions and let you fill in the blanks on a very busy day over at the University of Notre Dame. I know with you going to practice, that doesn't mean you can necessarily tell everything that was going on. So as much as you can, what do you feel like was one of the things that caught your attention watching practice today?
Well, I watched a lot of Clark Lee, and I'm going to be writing about him tomorrow. He's just a fascinating guy to watch in practice, and I really I felt like when Sean was talking to me about it yesterday, about Clark Lee's style, I got to see a lot more of it today. One of the things that's kind of cool, Darren, is when they're transitioning from one drill to another, he runs with the team. He actually tries to outrun them. I asked him what his 40 time was. He said it's not good, but I'll tell you what, he would get to the new station and then he would start telling them what was going to be involved in that drill, and he wasn't breathing hard, so I was impressed. And just the way that he breaks down every drill and says, this is what my expectations are, this is how it's going to help you on game day.
I thought that
was really interesting. So that was my biggest takeaway from practice today. You know, we're not allowed to say a lot of the details, but in very general terms, there were other wide receivers besides Miles Boykin that looked good. And then what we're able to share is the coaches talked about him. Chase Claypool was one of those. Chip Long said he's had two really good days of practice. And so I thought that was pretty significant. As far as where the offensive line evolution is going, I think that's going to be toward the end of spring practice when we get to a real good feel of who that fifth starter is going to be. Defensively, there was a lot of mix and matching of personnel, so you got to see different people kind of matching up with other folks. As far as how the quarterbacks looked, I thought they looked decent. You know, they didn't do a lot of scrambling today. They really tried to extend plays and throw the ball and get through their progressions. Again, if you thought, okay, how does this compare to what we saw at the end of last year? I thought they both looked better. Now, I did ask Chip Long, I said, how do you simulate, you know, game conditions? How can you know that the things that were troubling with the quarterbacks last year aren't going to show up on September 1st? Because you can't. They try to do as much as they can with pressures and simulating them, but he admitted that it's not the same thing. And I think a lot of our readers and listeners had that question. How do we know that what we're seeing in practice is what we're going to see on September 1st? And I thought that was kind of an interesting observation.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. Sports Bee brought to you by Budweiser on 96.1 WSBT. I'm sure you had your eyes everywhere during practice. And again, I know there's only so much you can say, but did you spend any time watching Aloe Gilman play safety today?
I did. And what I can tell
you... Can
you
say anything?
Yeah, what I can tell you is that I saw what the coaches were seeing last year when he was on scout team, a pretty aggressive guy. I know that when we had a chance to talk to special teams coordinator Brian Polian, when he was asked about who he's most excited about adding to the coverage teams and the return teams, Alohi Gilman's name was the first one out of his mouth. And so he is really excited about what he will bring to special teams. And so I think that's interesting. You know, I think with Terry Joseph, the defensive backs coach, he's trying to get as many looks as many different guys as he can right now. And so, you know, people kind of wonder, why are they trotting out last year's starters? Well, first of all, those guys are better players than they were last year. But secondly, Terry Joseph needs to process with an open mind all these new players before I think he starts fiddling with the depth chart.
I asked this more tongue-in-cheek than anything else, and I think you'll know why, but did you see Dexter Williams running with the ball today?
Yes, that is tongue-in-cheek, and Dexter
Williams... He was accounted for, that's all I wanted people to know.
Yeah, Dexter Williams is running the ball, as were the other running backs, I can say that. I'm trying to walk a fine line because I know. They want to be, you know, they're very specific about... Now, Saturday, when we have the open practice, I'll be able to talk about everything because that is when it's a normal media window and not a coach's clinic window. So
I just brought that up because so many people wondering, where's Dexter Williams? Why is he not running the football? That was a common theme last year. So I wanted people to know that Dexter was there and accounted for and ready to roll so far this year. All right, so when you have the South Bend Tribune in hand tomorrow, are we going to read about Clark Lee then?
That I'm going to run this weekend. I'm going to run it on the web at some point tomorrow. I'm going to write it tomorrow, and then we're going to run it in Sunday's paper. But tomorrow will be all pro day stuff. But there's a lot of content, a lot of really interesting things have happened in the last 24 hours. And we know a lot more about this football team and the former players. You know, we talked about Darren, what happened to Niles Morgan last year and what was going on with Josh Adams. And we got some of those answers at Pro Day today.
Well, let's get into some of the nuts and bolts of that conversation. And I want to talk about those two. But let me begin with this dynamic. It was Malik Zaire coming back to Notre Dame, the former Irish quarterback. You know, let's be honest, he was not known for throwing the football accurately, and you had a couple of guys in Equanimeous St. Brown and Durham Smythe that were scheduled to catch passes from him today. Now, you know what I think, Eric, going into this conversation? I think the NFL knows who Durham Smythe is. I don't think anything that happened today is going to change anything. I think they know who he is, how he fits in the NFL, and he's going to have a successful career. I think there are questions about Equanimeous St. Brown. Now, the accuracy of the quarterback last year obviously affected him, but I think we'd all agree the compete level, going up for that 50-50 ball, he was not as good as he needed to be, or like Miles Boykin against LSU on that game-winning touchdown. We needed to see more of that. In terms of the dynamic of Zaire throwing the ball and what Equanimeous St. Brown needed to do, how did that dynamic work today?
Well, I would say this. As I kind of expected, Malik was 10 times more prepared to be in that role than Everett Golson was last year. I think Everett was really a disappointment for both himself and for the players that he was throwing the ball to.
He was complaining about the footballs. You can't do that around NFL personnel.
Correct. Malik was a pro today.
Good.
You know, I charted his passes. He overthrew Durham Smythe on two of the first passes that he threw, and then he was 35 of 39 the rest of the time. Now, again, that's without defense on you. I talked to Equanimeous about Malik, and he said that they had been able to work together a couple of days before today, so that kind of got them in sync. You know, when you think about it, with Durham Smythe, Josh Adams, and Equanimeous, those were the three guys catching passes. They didn't have a lot of opportunity to work with Malik because of his injury in 2015 and then, you know, not being the number one guy in 2016. And so he wasn't as familiar with these guys, but they really, I mean, I thought Malik did a really good job. Now, again, he's not a, and Malik told Mike Vrell he thinks he's the best quarterback in the draft, but you know, his destination might be up north. He may end up in the Canadian League, and that may be a better fit for him right out of the chute as far as getting a pro opportunity, but we'll see. But at least, I mean, he ran hard. I don't know his 40 time yet. They've been kind of piecemealing things out in terms of those statistics, but he conducted himself very professionally, and I was impressed with him.
Equanimeous St. Brown's Day? Feel like it was a big day for him.
I thought so too. You know, his 4.48 at the combine, I think, helped him in a lot of people's eyes. You know, he's a very confident kid. I said, you know, what do you feel like pro teams will perceive you as? And he said, a deep threat and a touchdown machine. So he wasn't lacking for confidence today, but he looked good on his routes. There were some deep sideline routes that Malik threw to him, and he was pretty mindful of getting the 2 feet in, which is the difference between college and pros. The college, you just have to get the 1 foot in bounds. So I thought he was crisp on his routes. I don't think Equanimeous hurt himself at all. I still think he's got a really – he and Josh Adams are the two guys with such a wide range of where they could go in the draft. But I didn't see him hurt himself today. I thought he was impressive, and I thought Malik certainly helped that along.
I noticed on social media one of the reporters had asked Equanimeous about what are NFL teams asking you about, and EQ said that a lot of teams have asked him about how much he loved football. Now, that's something that's got to be a little concerning if you're Equanimeous, people questioning how much you love the game.
Well, I don't think that's an uncommon question. And when he was asked, you know, what kind of questions he was asked at the combine, it was different. It was why his first name was Equanimeous. So he was probably tired of that. But when you hear when you hear these guys talk, they've obviously rehearsed with their agents or their agents' handlers about how much passion they have for the game. I think every player mentioned that. But I don't know that Malik or Equanimeous doesn't love football, but I do think I wonder when they start to poke holes in his game if they feel like he was aggressive enough on getting open, aggressive enough on 50-50 balls, aggressive enough kind of playing through a few aches and pains and so forth. I think that's probably where their questions will be. But I wasn't there when he said that, but I did see that quote, and it didn't raise an eyebrow with me, really.
Okay. 24 minutes after the top of the hour. We'll get to Tyler James in just a couple of moments, but there's two more things, Eric, I want to get to in this segment as we're talking about Pro Day. I remember having the conversation with you after the Notre Dame-Boston College game in Chestnut Hill, just watching the game and just watching some of the reactions after tackles. I felt like Niles Morgan, the Irish linebacker, was banged up than possibly we knew. I know the right shoulder, it looked to be wrapped, and there were a couple of times he was just moving that right arm like something was of discomfort, and I was guessing it was the shoulder. Now, you mentioned today that Niles met the media, and he had a good solid season, but not a spectacular season. Did he offer any insight if he was banged up throughout that campaign?
Well, I asked him, and he was. He wasn't healthy at all year. It was right shoulder. He had surgery on January 9th, labrum surgery on January 9th. And so even though he was snubbed by the combine, he wouldn't have been able to do anything anyways. He told me he was only cleared to run 2 or 3 weeks ago. He can't bench press. He's not going to be fully healthy until June. And so he could have said, hey, look, I'm going to sit out the season and get some surgery, maybe come back for a fifth year or just go into the draft based on my junior year. And he didn't. He wanted to play for his team, and he was willing to put off that surgery until after the season. And he had a great attitude about it. He realizes that he might not get drafted, and he was able to run today, but, you know, he wasn't able to obviously bench press. But he's okay with that. He's going to work his rear end off and get into a camp and, you know, see what he can do. And I talked to Mike Mayock afterwards, and he felt like he would probably not get drafted, but he would be like Matthias Farley and James Onuwalu, that he would be good enough to make a roster and stick on a roster for a while.
Not surprised by what Niles had to say. He just did not look like himself last year. One more topic to get to. Josh Adams had that huge start to the year, the month of November, looked like a different running back. We wondered if he was healthy. What's the answer to that question?
Well, Mike Mayock suggested to me that Josh Adams had a foot injury and that he may have to have surgery. You know, Tyler James had a chance to talk to Josh, and Josh didn't deny it. He just said he wasn't quite sure. You know, they had to re-examine the foot and kind of see where that was. Now, having said that, didn't affect him today. He ran a 4.48 40, which would have been the fifth fastest time at the combine in Indy had he run it there. He was scorching in the three cone drill at 6.75. Really good times in the 60-yard shuttle and a good broad jump, all of which would have been in the top six. Actually, the three cone drill would have been the fastest among running backs. So he perform very well, but there's an issue, and it's probably, again, he's going to feel it tomorrow. He's going to be sore tomorrow. So what does he do? Does he have surgery now. You know, now that he's got his pro day out of the way, I think that's the big question with Josh Adams.
We'll have more on pro day in the My 5 question of the day. Eric's 5 top storylines or observations from pro day today. So we'll get to that in just a little bit. But coming up next, Tyler James will join us. Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune. A lot to get to, including Cade McNamara, since we last talked to Tyler, has joined the Michigan Wolverines, a former Irish quarterback commit. So we'll talk some recruiting in just a couple of moments. And, of course, for more on Pro Day, check out tomorrow's South Bend Tribune and later on IndyInsider.com. It is 29 minutes after the top of the hour. Football recruiting next on Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on 96.1 FM, WSBT, with the NDInsider.com recruiting update. Here's Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and the South Bend Tribune's Fighting Irish football recruiting insider, Tyler James.
We did not have the chance to talk to Tyler last Thursday due to the first round of the NCAA tournament being on WSBT radio, so I would say we have double the topics to get to today, so let's take care of business. And Tyler, let's start with a former Notre Dame verbal commitment. Quarterback Cade McNamara recently decommitted from the Fighting Irish, and it didn't feel like too many days passed, and he was verbally committing to the Michigan Wolverines. So it makes you wonder if something possibly had been in the works for some time. What do you think?
Yeah, that is correct. I actually found out after Cade committed to Michigan that he had made a visit to Ann Arbor sometime in early February while he was still committed to Notre Dame. So that kind of explained a little bit more about maybe what was getting into his head about potentially leaving Notre Dame's class and obviously landing at Notre Dame. It was interesting when he tweeted that he was committing to Michigan. He said, "I have been waiting to find this place for a long time," which I can imagine if you were connected to Notre Dame, you might not be happy about the way he phrased that. But that's the way recruiting goes sometimes. Notre Dame would have liked to have him in the class, and certainly was high on Cade before a lot of other programs were, but Michigan came in and pushed hard for him and was able to get him to flip his commitment.
Tyler, Notre Dame has already begun its search to find the next Cade McNamara or something better. And Max Duggan came in, was extended an offer. What can you tell us about Max Duggan, and do you think he's comparable to Cade McNamara?
Yeah, it was interesting when I was talking to Tom Lemming about just kind of getting some names from him, who he thinks Notre Dame should go after. When I offered the name Max Duggan to him, he said, "You know what, if I had to compare two guys nationally, I think Cade McNamara and Max Duggan kind of compare pretty similarly to each other." So Max had some injuries in his junior season, so he only completed 54 of his 95 passes for 748 yards and 8 touchdowns. But he's a dual-threat quarterback, rushed for 551 yards and 9 touchdowns. He's ranked as the number 4 dual-threat quarterback in the 2019 class by 24/7 Sports, number 7 pro-style QB by Rivals. So a guy that Notre Dame is trying to make a move for. He had been on campus previously last year when Notre Dame was looking at 2019 quarterbacks originally, and he's got some offers from Ohio State, Georgia, Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota. It seemed like Nebraska, Iowa, and Minnesota felt like they were in good spots with him, but we'll see if Notre Dame can sort of change that and get in the mix here.
South Bend Tribune's Tyler James talking Fighting Irish football recruiting on WSBT. Now, I know all these kids coming out of high school are very confident in their abilities. I don't think competition scares many of them. Now, I'm sure some get a little concerned about who's at this school and who's at that school. I just bring this up because there is so much fanfare around Phil Dracovic, who's coming to South Bend, of course, this summer. He'll be a freshman this fall. Is it going to be difficult to recruit a 2019 quarterback, an elite high-level quarterback, because Dracovic is on this roster? Or does it go back to, you know what, these kids, they don't care. They believe in their abilities, and they can beat out anybody.
I don't think it'll be tough. I think it is tough when you have someone else trying to take that quarterback away from you. So Cade's already committed to Notre Dame. He's been convinced he wants to come to Notre Dame. Notre Dame has Phil Dracovic in the class. Michigan, any other school can say, "Hey, Notre Dame has this quarterback. Brian Kelly thinks he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Do you really think they're telling you the truth that you're going to be able to play early in your career? This is what we have on our roster. Maybe they downplay what they have on their own roster and kind of spin it in their favor. And so I think it gets the kids thinking about that. But I think if you're talking about a kid looking at it from an open standpoint, it's less of an impact because maybe a certain school isn't necessarily hitting that hard. But I imagine any of these schools that Notre Dame is recruiting against is going to say, hey, do you think you're better than Phil Dracovic? But I think it's almost kind of dismissive to the kid to ask him that because, of course, he thinks he's probably better than Phil Dracovic because he should feel confident about himself.
Tyler, Notre Dame during the Brian Kelly era has done a pretty good job of cherry-picking some of the top players out of Indiana. And then just recently, Samson James from Avon High School in Indiana committed to Ohio State. What's kind of your take on Ohio State coming over and getting a really good running back, and how good is this kid?
Yeah, Samson James is a four-star running back.
Not just 'cause his name's James.
Yeah, obviously. Any James is a top talent, if you ask me. But LeBron, Edrin, there's tons of us. But Samson James was the number nine running back in the 2019 class, according to 24/7 Sports, the number two overall recruit in the state of Indiana for the 2019 class. Notre Dame had certainly been after Samson. They offered him back in January. He'd been on campus a couple times before. He never really felt like a guy that I thought would end up at Notre Dame, so I don't know that this is necessarily like a swing and a miss, a guy that they should have got a commitment from, but they lost out to Ohio State with. But it is kind of maybe a troubling trend when it comes to Notre Dame recruiting in the state of Indiana. You kind of have to go back to the 2015 class with Josh Barajas, Asmar Bilal, McKelty Williams. Brandon Tissen was in that class, where Notre Dame really got a lot of the top talent out of the state of Indiana. The 2016 class, Brandon Peters went to Michigan, a quarterback. Austin Mack, a wide receiver, went to Ohio State. 2017 was Hunter Johnson's class. He was off to play quarterback at Clemson. Pete Warner, who they had in the class, and he ended up going to Ohio State. Cameron McGrone in the past class of linebackers signed with Michigan. Donald Johnson, DJ Johnson, a cornerback out of Indianapolis, went to Iowa. So Notre Dame, there is some talent here in Indiana. Notre Dame's not necessarily winning out with it with regularity as of late. So I think that's something to keep an eye on because there seems to be some good talent that some big-time programs are wanting to get out of the state of Indiana, and they're being able to do that right now.
Boy, Tyler, this might be off the top of your head. Hope it's not an unfair question. Are there a couple of names that come to mind, kids that play in the state of Indiana that Notre Dame might be looking at very closely, or is it too early to tell?
In the 2019 class, I know a wide receiver they'd love to have is David Bell out of Warren Central. He's the best prospect in the state, according to 24/7 Sports. He actually hit a game-winning shot for Warren Central's basketball team to beat Romeo Langford in the state tournament earlier, I think last weekend. George Karloftis is a defensive end out of West Lafayette who Notre Dame was pursuing, but he committed to Purdue. Bo Robbins is a defensive end out of Carmel, Indiana that they've evaluated but haven't offered. So those are kind of the top recruits in the state right now. I don't know that any of those guys will necessarily end up at Notre Dame, but there certainly are some talented players again this year.
Tyler, there's the new recruiting rules have pushed up the recruiting calendar even more, and I believe that there's some guys coming in for visits, official visits this week, is that right?
Not official visits this week. Okay. Official visits can't happen until April 1st, but there's unofficial visits coming in.
Okay, but there will be official visits in April, correct?
Correct, yes, absolutely.
And then how about unofficial visits coming up this weekend?
This weekend there will be, I believe, four 2019 recruits expected to be on campus. Braden Liebrock is a tight end out of Arizona. Kenyatta Watson, a defensive back we've talked about before, that's kind of narrowed down his decision between Notre Dame and Texas. He'll be getting back on campus. Garrett Wilson, a receiver out of Texas, and Adam Berghorst, a defensive end out of Michigan. All are early targets for Notre Dame. They all have offers. Adam Berghorst and Kenyatta Watson have both been to campus already, so kind of moving along in the recruiting process with some of these guys. We'll see where Notre Dame stands with these guys as spring moves forward, because I think it's getting to that time of year where you would expect Notre Dame to start growing its class, and this is another opportunity for Notre Dame to do that.
So, Tyler, with the new recruiting calendar, this is a time where they're pushing for official visits hard, correct?
Yeah, they're in a kind of a tough spot, because I think it's with if you're bringing a kid on campus in April, and we spoke to Brian Pulling, the recruiting coordinator, earlier today about this, you're not necessarily getting the entire football experience in Notre Dame. And if they use an official visit in April, maybe they're not going to have a chance to get back for a game. But so they have to figure out how they can handle that. If a kid is saying he wants to decide before his senior year, they're going to obviously go ahead and move forward with hosting the kid for an official visit. But there's some requirements that Notre Dame has set for making an official visit. The NCAA requires you to have a test score on file, and so there's not necessarily every kid has already taken a test, the ACT or the SAT. They want to make sure they have transcripts in hand and know that they're in a good place with those kids and are serious about Notre Dame if they're going to go ahead and use an official visit, because Notre Dame is... the NCAA does legislate how many official visits you're allowed to host, and Brian Pulling mentioned today that that number actually for this spring is a part of the number that they hosted back in the fall and in the winter. So he said, I think they have between 16 and 19 official visits available to them for this spring official visit period that starts in April and runs through early June. So they'll have to figure out how they balance all those out and get the right guys on campus that feel like they need to make an early decision.
Tyler, beyond that, we had a chance to talk to Brian Pulling about special teams and a lot of recruiting stuff. Maybe what was your biggest takeaway beyond what we've already discussed from a recruiting standpoint with Brian?
I think that he feels like that. I asked him a little bit about the number of offers is extended, and he was quick to point out that Notre Dame doesn't necessarily offer as many of the other kids, even though Notre Dame is certainly ahead of schedule for the amount of offers they normally extend. They're still not at the pace of some of these other schools that extend offers, and he says that their offers are more real than some other schools. But that they feel like they had more time in January to evaluate because they were only focusing on a certain number of guys for the February signing day. They could get in a better spot to feel comfortable with more kids in the 2019 class to go ahead and offer them. So we'll see how that plays out for them and where that lands them with getting these kids on visits for getting these kids on campus for visits and seeing where their interest is.
Tyler, did you talk to Josh Adams today at Pro Day?
Yes, I did. I did talk to Josh.
Anything stand out from that conversation?
Well, he wasn't, I don't know if you guys had discussed earlier about his foot issues, non-issue. He did say that he wasn't sure if he's going to need some sort of surgery or procedure on his foot. He didn't even specify what foot. He was pretty noncommittal about that, but he said he felt like he ran strong today, and it was important that he do that because he did sit out his workout at the combine, and I think he felt pretty good about what he was able to do today, and we'll have to see what happens with his foot and whether that's a bad thing about him or if the fact that he ran a 4.48 today despite having that issue is a good thing. I don't really know the answer to that, but I don't think he does either. He's just kind of taking it all in stride.
Well, Tyler, I know late in the year, Miami kind of set the blueprint. They tried to take away the run and force Notre Dame to throw the football, and other teams followed. Do you think that was the major reason why Adams had a decline in production, or did it have something to do with the foot?
I think it's probably a mixture of both. I think some predictability with Notre Dame's offense and not being scared of the passing game probably made it harder on him. But he didn't necessarily always seem like he was at the peak level that he appeared to be earlier in the season. So I think it's fair to wonder whether or not that was an issue or not. Okay. And I don't know that we'll ever get an answer from that. He's not gonna use that as an excuse in any way, and isn't going to blame anyone else for what happened.
Fair enough. Eric, you got anything else?
Tyler, you answered them all for me. I wasn't sure if Darren was going to stay on his role there. I was enjoying that.
Well, if you have any more questions, Eric, you can ask me in the office. We'll talk later.
Sounds good.
You guys can have your private session.
I'm glad you didn't ask me to stop at Portillo's on the way home and wait in line forever.
Well, now that you mentioned it, you got to do it. I mean, you're teasing now. Come on. You got to bring something for the office. Tyler, what should we expect in the South Bend Tribune or IndyInsider.com?
Well, yeah, I'll have a story on Josh Adams, like you mentioned, from talking to him today, and I'll have a story the next day previewing the guys coming on campus, and many more stories to come. Another story off of what I talked to Brian Pulling about today, so plenty of news coming your way in the South Bend Tribune about Notre Dame football and Notre Dame football recruiting.
Very good. Tyler, we look forward to that. Thank you for your time, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you guys.
There you go, Tyler James with the latest in Fighting Irish football recruiting, and Josh Adams from Pro Day here on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Check him out in the South Bend Tribune, IndyInsider.com, and of course, follow him on Twitter for the latest in recruiting news, TJamesNDI, is that right?
You got it.
I started to panic for a second. I couldn't picture it. T. James NDI, that is his Twitter account. He is always a good follow. Coming up next, we'll put a bow sort of on Pro Day by asking the My 5 question of the day, which reads, Eric's 5 biggest storylines or observations from Notre Dame Pro Day. We'll get to that coming up in just a couple of moments. Eric Hansen back in our WSBT studios. I'm Darren Pritchett with the Fighting Irish hockey team at the NCAA Tournament Regional in Bridgeport, Connecticut. By the way, we dodged the Northeaster. We just got just a smattering of snowflakes. Other parts of the East Coast got hit hard, but here in Bridgeport, we actually did not have a Northeaster. So we actually lucked out. It's a beautiful day here today. All right,
we didn't have a Midwester here either.
Well, good. I'm happy to hear that. Well, we'll get to the My 5 after this. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
One question, 5 answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
All right, Eric Hansen back at our studios. Darren Pritchett, Bridgeport, Connecticut with the Irish hockey team. And we're set for the My 5 question of the day. Eric's 5 observations or storylines from Notre Dame football Pro Day. Today he's got 5 answers. He's ranked them from 5 to 1 with number one being his favorite storyline of the day. We begin with the fourth runner-up, or number 5.
Well, there were 9 players that participated in Pro Day today. One of the 4 who weren't invited to the NFL Combine, Greer Martini, had a decent day. He didn't do the bench press, ran in the high 4.7s for his 40, 4.78. But he had a good vertical jump, 33, did some good, put up some other good numbers and some of the other shuttles, and had a 9.11 standing broad jump. So decent day for Greer Martini, helped himself.
All right, we move along to storyline number 4.
Malik Zaire was back at Notre Dame, and again, I think that Malik really conducted himself well. He measured just a little bit short of 6 foot, 5.11 and 7.8 at 225 pounds. Really didn't, light it up running. He ran slower than Andrew Drumbetti. He was 4.93 was his best 40. But really, I thought conducted himself very well and certainly helped the Notre Dame running backs and receivers today.
We're going through the top storylines or observations from Notre Dame football Pro Day today. Eric, number 3.
Well, I think Niles Morgan's injury, we kind of suspected all season that he was never 100%, and he wasn't. And put off surgery until after the season so he could help his team. Had labrum surgery in January. His 40, fastest 40 time was 4.78, but he was just cleared to run a couple weeks ago. So Niles Morgan and his comeback from shoulder surgery.
We move along to number 2.
Josh Adams and foot gait. We don't know if it's going to require surgery. We don't know how serious this foot injury is. But boy, can he run on an injured foot. 4.48 in the 40-yard dash today.
Sounds like he had a pretty good day then. And now we're up to your top storyline or observation from Notre Dame Football Pro Day.
I've never seen this at a Pro Day. Every person, I think, in the Loftus Center was in a big circle around Mike McGlinchey and Quentin Nelson doing drills. And it was, if you've seen the highlights of Quentin Nelson dominating people on Twitter or Facebook, it was like that live today. They had Durham Smythe providing resistance on a drill, and he almost drove him into a group of spectators. Mike Mayock, NFL Network analyst, I talked to him afterwards. He said it was the best offensive line drills he has seen in his 15
wow.
years as an analyst. He said it was by far the best Pro Day he's ever seen from offensive linemen.
Eric, I know I'm being selfish, but as a Bronco fan at pick number 5, I never thought I would say this because I don't like taking offensive guards in the first round. if you're settled on Case Keenum as your quarterback, I don't know how you don't take this guy to anchor your interior of your offensive line, which has been a problem the last couple of years. They still want to run the football, and what better way to do it with that guy?
Absolutely, and he had the sweetest gold sparkly shoes on. I asked his dad, Craig Nelson, about it, and he compared Nelson and his cleats to Imelda Marcos, the Philippine president who had thousands of pairs of shoes.
Well, as leader of his Heisman campaign, I feel like he should go to my team then automatically, right?
There you go.
There, that's what it's all about. Me, me, me. All right, that's the My Five Quest of the Day. More Sports Beat coming up on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, I'll have the overview from all the happenings at today's NFL Combine. Mike has a sidebar on Malik Zaire and Quentin Nelson. Tyler has a sidebar on Josh Adams. We have Tom Noyes column on Jackie Young, who is on her way to Spokane, actually there already, as Notre Dame plays Saturday in the Sweet 16 of the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament. Tom had a live chat today for men's basketball. We'll have a Purdue basketball advance. And Darren, there might even be much, much more beyond that.
Well, I sure hope so. Eric, good to talk to you. We will talk again soon.
Sounds good.
All right, Sean Sires will join me in just a couple of moments. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett here on WSBT Radio. And I'm with the Irish hockey team in Bridgeport, Connecticut, where we've got beautiful sunny around 42 degrees. And we're set for hockey tomorrow, the NCAA tournament against Michigan Tech. More on that in a couple of moments. WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stires.
We're ready for hour two. Darren Pritchett has moved from really special good Comrex equipment to a little bit more mobile, I believe, for the second hour. Is that right, Darren?
That is correct. Can you hear me loud and clear?
I can hear you loud and clear. We are rocking and rolling. I'm sitting in the pilot seat here tonight. We're okay. Ready to go.
Well, you know, I'm surrounded by what the world's best strength and conditioning coach and hockey recruiters. If you have any questions in those lines, I'll just hand the phone to them and, you know, they can take care of business.
All right. Sounds good. By the way, what is the weather like up there? Are you guys just covered in snow in the Bridgeport area, or what's it like up there right now?
Honestly, we got just a few snowflakes yesterday. The ground was covered, and that was it. It missed us.
Nice.
So I know New York City, Pennsylvania, they got hit pretty good, but the old Easter, it did not hit us here, so we got very, very lucky.
All right. Well, good deal. Well, we're ready to go. Do you want me to kind of go with things here? I don't know which, if you have any of your show stuff in front of you to go off, or if you want me to just kind of hit it.
You can go and hit it. I have a great memory, but why don't you drive the bus?
All right. Sounds good. Well, of course, we've got the Sweet 16 coming up tonight. Westwood One's coverage of March Madness here on WSBT. We've got four games, starting with the one that maybe kind of has all of our hearts, 7-seed Nevada against 11-seed Loyola Chicago. Then after that, it's Michigan and Texas A&M. About 30 minutes after that tip-off, 7:37, Kansas State and Kentucky follow, and then the nightcap is Florida State Gonzaga. So any thoughts that you have on these games tonight?
It's interesting, Sean, because we started last week talking about Loyola. That was one of the teams I really like to get to the Sweet 16. I wish I would have picked them farther now, because I think they've got a great opportunity playing Nevada tonight. But a lot of people are picking them as a team to go to the Final Four now, with Kansas State and Kentucky and the other part of the draw. And
you know, with the way they share the ball, again, I kind of compare Loyola to Notre Dame from one standpoint. They moved the ball beautifully. They worked for the really, really good shot. Now, they don't have the offensive weapons that Notre Dame has, but with the way they share the basketball, I think it gives them a great opportunity to beat anybody, and they've shown that so far in the tournament.
Yeah, and they've kind of famously, Nevada has overcome the 22 and 14 point deficits to get to the Sweet 16. But I don't think they can fall behind like that to Loyola, because Loyola is such a good offensive team. And you talk about the movement, they shoot 50% from the floor, better than 50%. That's just amazing. That's for the season, not just in the tournament. But the one thing with Nevada is they're not your average mid-major, because part of Eric Musselman's team is built on the fact that they've got three transfers from Power Five conferences. Kendall Stevens came from Purdue, and then they got twins Caleb and Cody Martin from NC State, and they're all vital guys for Nevada. So I think Nevada's going to be a tough out tonight for Loyola Chicago.
Well, Loyola can defend pretty well too, so that gives them a fighter's chance. And I brought this up why I picked Loyola, but besides the fact they're a good team, they just have that pedigree. They're made up of players that had great success at the high school level in Illinois, winning state championships. So they know how to win. They're not going to be afraid of the moment. So just little traits like that can make a difference in a game like this.
Yep. And then the game, we'll go to one of the later games, Kansas State and Kentucky. And you've got Kansas State without their leading scorer, Dean Wade. But, I mean, let's be honest. All they've had to do is beat an 8 seed and a 16 seed to get this far. This is their second Sweet 16 since they got all the way to the Elite Eight against Kansas in 1988 when the Jayhawks ended up winning the national championship with Danny Manning.
I don't know how you feel, but a Notre Dame team without Bonzi Colson, I feel like they would beat Kansas State in the seven-game series easily.
Yeah, especially no better than Kansas State shoots three-pointers. I mean, they're not a really good – they're a decent defensive team, but they just don't shoot the ball that well at all. They were really fortunate that UMBC just had a really off-shooting night after shooting so well in that upset of Virginia.
I mean, we all love the Retriever story. I mean, it was great to beat the number one seed in Virginia, but have you ever seen a worse second-round game than the Maryland-Baltimore County Kansas State game? I mean, that bad boy was just brutal.
Talk about a letdown.
Nobody could score. What I think the Retrievers had 18 possessions in the second half with a chance to tie or take the lead, and they went 0-18 in those opportunities.
Yeah. Yep. Really
so Kansas State's very fortunate to be, where they are. They're just a little better than average team coming out of a very good conference, and they've got a fighter's chance against, a Kentucky team that's probably playing their best basketball right now.
Yep. So I think we're all in on Kentucky with those young guys.
Yes.
A really good offensive team. They're killing it. Over 50% from the floor and 43% on three-pointers over their past 10 games. They're definitely peaking at the right time. And then the 7:37 game is an interesting one. People around this area, of course, know about Michigan. They're on a roll right now with 11 straight wins. But then another 7 seed, Texas A&M, that was actually ranked at the start of the season. They've dealt with some injuries, and now they come in here, and they're really kind of, any other tournament, we might be talking about this team, but there are so many 7, 9, and 11 seeds hanging around that they're not even really a blip on the radar right now.
Well, it's such a contrast in styles. Texas A&M has that big front line. Michigan's got some height, but they are so built on hitting outside shots, moving the ball, three-pointers. A&M, you think, well, they have the advantage with the height, but keep in mind that height has to guard Michigan on the outside.
Yeah.
And so I think that's going to be a problem for them. I think Michigan wins this game and gets to the Elite Eight on their outside shooting, and I think A&M maybe played their game a game too early.
Michigan peaking again. Here we go. All right. And then the final game of the evening starts at around 10:07. Another 9-seed Florida State against Gonzaga, which is in its fourth straight Sweet 16. And, of course, they got all the way to the national championship game last year.
I'm the wrong guy to ask, because I thought all along Florida State's not that good.
Yeah.
but in the ACC, they won enough games to get in the tournament. I gave them no chance to beat Xavier. So I'm really the wrong guy to ask about them, because I felt like Notre Dame was better than them. Florida State got them. during the ACC season when Notre Dame was not at full strength. But I just think defensively they're not very good. I think Gonzaga exposes that fact tonight. I'm shocked that Xavier wasn't able to.
Yeah, I agree with that because Florida State is definitely not the defensive team that they've been built on with Leonard Hamilton. Gonzaga's averaging more than 84 points a game. I think they're going to be a tough team for Florida State to beat. So, I mean, that would set up a potential Michigan-Gonzaga Elite Eight, which would be a pretty interesting game to watch.
Yes, it will. And I'm rooting for Gonzaga.
All right. We're going to have...
I'm going to take Loyola, Kentucky, Gonzaga, and Michigan.
Okay. The only difference that we have is I'm taking Nevada tonight.
Okay.
My heart is with Loyola, but my head is saying it's going to be Nevada tonight. I just think that this is where the Cinderella story ends for Sister Jean and those crazy Ramblers.
Well, State of Illinois used to be good at basketball, so I got to root for somebody.
That's right. Okay, we're going to try to do some rapid fire here. There was a media session earlier today. We got to talk to all the coordinators over at Notre Dame, so we've got that coming up in our next segment. Of course, Jeff Jackson, we'll hear from the Fighting Irish hockey coach at the end of this hour as well. Let's try to get through some rapid fire, and at any point, if you think we need to stop and take a break so we can stay on schedule, just let me know, okay?
Okay, we just arrived at the restaurant, so I'm just kind of hanging out.
Okay, all right. Sounds good. Somebody's going to have to bring you a menu, I guess. Okay.
I guess so.
Do you buy or sell Miles Boykin leading the Fighting Irish in receptions next season?
You know what? I'm going to buy that. I think there might be a lot of people in the running from being number two pass catcher through six, but I think from what I've seen from Miles late in the year, and then the things we hear about Miles so far in the spring, I'm pretty confident. I think there's some tight ends that can be in the conversation. It sounds like Claypool's been having a good spring, but I'm going to go with Miles.
Yeah, I buy it as well. I mean, he's moving into Equanimee St. Brown's spot, and that was obviously who led the team in receiving the last couple of years. Chip Long talked today about how much stronger Boykin is in his upper body, how he's able to fight off defensive backs better. And then Brian Kelly was talking about the other day about the rapport that Boykin and Wimbush are developing. So if it's not Boykin, I would say Claypool, but I would go with Boykin right now as well, especially after all the things that we saw from him last spring, and we were kind of shocked that we didn't see more of him and then get the big highlight down there in the Citrus Bowl against LSU. Okay, next question. Chris Mack from Xavier is considered a favorite to take the Louisville basketball job. If you were Mack, do you stay at Xavier or take over the Cardinals job?
You know, that's an interesting question because the Louisville job's better
right.
in the long run. But, Sean, here's the problem. I never like to replace a legendary figure if I'm in that position. Now, I know Padgett was in between Pitino and the next guy. But you know what? You're still very close to the Rick Pitino era. A different standard, national championship. Well, I guess those are kind of going away. But I'm just never comfortable being that close to a legend. Now, I don't know what else Matt can do at Xavier. He's had great success. It sounds like he started just kind of sweeping the floors and worked his way up to being the head coach. So is there a next step for that program? I'm not sure you can take it much farther. So it's tough, Sean. I mean, I think the money's going to be so much better at Louisville. Your recruiting budget goes up, everything. But I just think you're so close to Pitino, it's going to be a tough standard to live up for. So I might wait for that next opportunity because I think he will get another opportunity. So I think I might just stay at Xavier and pass on that Louisville job, plus all the other issues going on with the program. They got to clean up that entire athletic department, including the basketball program. And I don't know if I want to be a part of it.
Yeah, those are the things I always thought about, but that is an interesting point with Pitino. You would always rather follow the guy who followed the legend than be the guy immediately following the legend. That is a good point.
I follow Mike Davis. I don't follow Bob Knight.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. But, I mean, the other stuff that you mentioned, I mean, it is the ACC, better facilities, a lot more money that he would get. But the stuff to me was more the – They're on probation from the stripper scandal. We don't know what's going to happen with the FBI investigation. But we also don't know just how, I mean, his stock is really high right now. This might be as high as his stock is because he had Xavier ranked number one this year. And they were a number one seed even though they bowed out in the second round. So there are just so many positives, but one negative. And I don't know how high he can keep that stock high. So Pittsburgh is open too. So even though that's the ACC, I don't think Pittsburgh would be worth his interest. You would hold out, but there aren't a whole lot of other high profile opportunities out there right now.
On another note, I must be the team and I must be going to eat at a good restaurant because Barry Melrose and John Butchergrass just walked by me.
Hey, all right.
This must be a good place to eat here. What are we doing? That. I'm telling you, living the high life.
Very good. Very good. All right. Which is more likely to happen in the NCAA tournament this weekend or overall? Kansas makes the Final Four or Villanova wins the national championship?
You know, I have a man crush on Bill Self, my guy. Love the Jayhawks because of him.
Right.
But I just feel like they're not as good as their number one seed. I've just never been sold on them. Hey, they were in a tough conference and they won the conference, so anybody can spit on that statement. But I just don't know if they're going to be able to get all the way to the Final Four this year. I think Villanova's got to run into Purdue probably eventually. I think those two win and meet in the regional final. That's not going to be easy, but just because I'm not a believer in Kansas, I'm going to go with Villanova, strangely enough. I know it's tough to win the national championship, and they did it a couple of years ago, but I'm basing this on not believing in Kansas more than being a believer in Villanova, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I mean, you can believe in their offense because they've got one of the best scoring offenses they've had, 81 points a game, but they've also got one of the worst defenses Bill Self maybe has ever had, specifically on the interior, which is where they got killed by Oregon in the Elite Eight last year. They just got killed inside, and the Delgado kid for Seton Hall the other day, nobody knew about him nationally before that game. He had a monster game, over 20 points and 20 rebounds, and that's where they are vulnerable. I mean, they can sit out there and hit threes all day, but if they stop hitting threes, that's where they get in trouble. And maybe the defense is because you've got Duke and Syracuse. Duke's playing this zone now, but I just think Villanova's path to the Final Four alone is a little bit better. And you know, you mentioned winning the Big 12. They weren't tested by really good big men in the Big 12, even though they lost some games. But they've got to keep hitting those threes. If they stop hitting the threes, that's where they get in trouble. And Marvin Bagley could just be too much for them. Him and everything else that Duke brings with the athletes. Because just athletically, they're similar, but Duke plays a lot better defense than Kansas, and they score. So
hope I'm wrong. Go Kansas.
Yeah.
Rock, Chuck, Jayhawks.
So do I.
Whatever that chant is, they hum. I don't know what it is, but I'll hum along.
That's Rock, Chuck, Jayhawk. That's right. You got it right.
All right.
Okay, ESPN's hiring former Bears head coach John Fox. You interested to hear what Fox has to say breaking down the NFL?
I could not be more uninterested. I mean, he never said anything in his press conferences. That's couldn't believe anything he said. I mean, as a Bronco fan, I lived it. Bears fans lived it. You can't believe anything he says. So, A, he's dry. B, he never tells you anything. And C, I never believed anything he said. So, no, I'm not overly interested at all. I can't think of a worse hire, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, simple answer for me is no as well. He seems like a decent enough guy, but I agree. I just never heard anything overly compelling come out of his mouth. Ugh. So I guess we'll find out. Maybe he'll surprise us. Who knows? But right now, I don't think either one of us is looking for it. Okay.
No, that's for sure.
Yeah. Last question. ESPN, the magazine, celebrating 20 years by ranking the 20 most dominant athletes over the past 20 years. They've got Peyton Manning third on the list as the top player from the NFL. Tom Brady is 20th. So do you buy or sell that, Manning ahead of Brady on this ranking?
I should have asked that 5 minutes ago. I'd have handed the phone to Butchergrass and Melrose. They could have handled this. You know, they're ESPN guys.
That's right.
Peyton Manning is, I'm sorry, not a quarterback that should be ahead of Tom Brady on this list. I wonder if ESPN just did this to get attention to their list. I don't know how you put Peyton Manning ahead of Tom Brady. It's just longevity, the advantage is Brady. I think Brady worked with lesser offensive weapons throughout his career, even though he had Gronk, of course, the last few years. But I just can't see how you put Peyton Manning ahead of Tom Brady. On the list of great quarterbacks in the NFL, Brady has to be ahead of him.
Yeah, I mean, it surprises me as well. Statistically, they're fairly similar. Manning's about 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns ahead, and that's over about the same amount of time. But when you look at the fact that Manning played the bulk of his career having Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne, not to mention Marshall Faulk and Edgerrin James, I mean, the closest thing that Brady has had, Gronk and Randy Moss for a couple of years, and Gronk's hurt most of the time. So it's, to me,
well,
and then you factor in the Super Bowls, Brady's got 5 wins, Manning has 2. I mean, I'm pretty shocked as well.
And I think 400 of Manning's touchdown passes were 1 yard.
Wow.
I'm kidding. He threw a ton of 1 yard touchdown passes. Run the ball, now we're going to audible to a pass.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, all right. Brady's my guy for that.
All right. It is 6:25. We've got March Madness from Westwood One coming up at 7 o'clock tonight. We've got an interview with Jeff Jackson coming up in a little bit. The Fighting Irish hockey coach, Darren Pritchett, is in Bridgeport, Connecticut, getting ready for hockey. Tomorrow, we're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll hear from Clark Lee and Chip Long, the two coordinators for the Fighting Irish who spoke to the media earlier today. That's coming up next on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues. Sean Stiers, as Darren Pritchett steps out to get a little grub with the Notre Dame hockey team in Bridgeport, Connecticut, getting ready for tomorrow's NCAA tournament matchup against Michigan Tech. You'll hear it at 3 o'clock on Z94.3. Darren will join Evan Sharpley and I tomorrow at about 12:30 as well during the Leprechaun lunch to talk more about the matchup between Notre Dame and Michigan Tech. Busy day today over at Notre Dame. They had pro day this afternoon. There was practice earlier this morning with the coaches' clinic getting started over there, and the media had the opportunity to talk to all the coordinators, including defensive coordinator Clark Lee and offensive coordinator Chip Long. And we'll start with Clark Lee. He was asked about the differences between him and former defensive coordinator Mike Elko, whom, of course, Lee worked for a long time, including last year as linebackers coach here at Notre Dame. And here is what Lee said.
You know, I don't know. I mean, honestly, like, he is a really close friend. There's a reason we worked together for as long as we did and as many different places as we did. And everyone has unique points to their personality. And, it's hard for me to identify necessarily those just because I don't look at it that way. I'm just being myself, just like he's his self. But philosophically, you know, we're really close, closely aligned. How we treat the players, the discipline of the players, the accountability of the players, the loving of the players, trying to build relationships, that stuff's going to be very similar.
And, of course, a big part of it, the familiarity that he had with the defense and the whole thing. So that kind of begs the next question. What is the biggest adjustment going from a position coach to being coordinator for the first time?
It's just constantly fighting to have a big picture perspective. Day to day, when you're preparing a position group, you can see things out of a straw. You can, focus on just the little details that you need for the group to have success. In this role, you're overseeing a lot more. And so, I want to make sure the defense practices in a manner that Coach Kelly likes, that he wants. And so, thinking about what I need to communicate to the players in that respect, or to the coaches in that respect, preparing practice becomes different because, ultimately, you got to script the plays. And so it's just, there's a lot of subtle ways that it's changed. But what I've tried to do the best I can is just, when it comes down to the nuts and bolts, is just be the same coach I was for a bigger position group. And I've tried to involve myself the best I can with the groups like the corners and the safeties and the defensive line, and hopefully they take to my personality, and we build relationships that way.
They seem to be, so far. He sprints on and off the field, and they seem to take to that, and Seems like a fairly seamless transition. Of course, we don't get to see all the behind the scenes, what's going on. One of the bigger questions is going to be what happens when the lights are on and game situations and how he's going to call games. And that's something that we'll find out down the road as well. Now, as to the offensive side of the ball, Chip Long had the chance to speak to the media as well. And the quarterback situation, which we'll get to here in just a second, that's probably at the top of most fans' list. What's going to happen with Brandon Wimbush? Is it going to be Ian Book? What about Avery Davis, who's seeing some time running the ball and doing some different things and not just being the quarterback? But then you've also got a shuffling of wide receivers, and the bigger question, probably the left side of the offensive line. But for Chip Long, what are his biggest priorities on the offensive side of the ball this spring with a lot of guys back, but some key departures as well?
You know, I just want to get a real good evaluation on the young guys, kind of so I know what I have and don't have going into fall camp, and I can start moving the pieces around, you know. I want to see guys who can play tough, play physical, you know, see if they're tougher than they were last year, see if they're making that growth, and then we've got to make some changes to try to figure out ways to get them tougher in the summer where they can play and play at a high level all the time. Get an evaluation with the young guys, what they can do and do well, and especially the young guys up front. You know, moving guys around, just seeing certain things. I'm not a real big believer in for certain guys been there a long time, that's where it should be. I think that builds complacency, and I want guys to compete and earn it and get our best five out there, especially up front. Some good competition now. It's really better competition than we ever had last year, I can tell you that. Last year's team was special, but this year's team was probably way more competitive overall as a group than I've seen in the first 4 days, and that's really, really, really made me happy.
And that makes sense because there really was not a quarterback competition last spring. Pretty much knew what from center, Sam Mustipher, Quentin Nelson, and then Mike McGlinchey from the center to the left, 3/5 of the offensive line was going to look like, and some other spots like St. Brown, so, and Josh Adams in the backfield. So it makes sense that there's a lot more competition this spring because of some of the turnover that they've had and guys fighting for those positions now. And then, now the big question is Brandon Wimbush, who completed just under 50% of his passes last year, even though he had 16 touchdowns through the air and 14 on the ground. He completed 49% of his 275 attempts, while Ian Book, he completed 61%, but he had 200 fewer pass attempts as well, and he also had just two fewer interceptions, 6 for Wimbush in 275 attempts, 75 for Book, or as 4 interceptions for Book in 75 attempts. But that said, we know from what we got to see in practice last spring and last fall, Brandon Wimbush was a lot different quarterback on game day than he was in those practices. So the question is, now, is it possible to simulate in practice what the quarterbacks see in a game? And here's what Chip Long said.
You can't. I mean, try to, you know, right now, third down situations, a lot of pressure, you know, but you still can't simulate getting hit. Right. And that's hard as a young quarterback. You know, you usually have to take a year to understand how to play when you're getting hit, when things aren't going well. And that's what's exciting to see in the growth in both those guys right now. And then, you know, spring game, trying to get them out in front of the fans. You still can't get an idea for the first time you take one in the chin and get up and have to do it again. So, you know, you talk about it and you keep challenging them, and they know. They see it. They feel it. And that's what's special about that position. And
we'll continue to see how that goes. But interesting to say you really can't simulate that stuff. Brandon Wimbush has looked a little smoother so far in the glimpses that we have had of him at practice. But again, it's practice. How much does that mean? Can it translate to the game next fall? We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, you'll hear from Notre Dame hockey coach Jeff Jackson. Darren Pritchett and I talked to him earlier this week. You'll hear that interview coming up next as Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT. Along with Sean Stiers, I'm Darren Pritchett. The Fighting Irish hockey team getting set to head to the East Coast. Bridgeport is the site of the NCAA Tournament East Regional. The Fighting Irish are the number one seed in that regional. Providence 2, Clarkson 3, and Notre Dame's regional semifinal opponent, Michigan Tech, number 4, the champions of the WCHA. They shut out Northern Michigan on the road 2-0 to claim the automatic berth into the NCAA tournament. And the Fighting Irish head into the Field of 16 as Big Ten regular season champions and Big Ten tournament champions. And the architect of the Irish hockey team, Jeff Jackson, joins us here on WSBT Radio. He led Lake Superior State to 2 national championships back in the early 90s, so he knows what it's like to go down this path. Coach, it's Darren. First off, congratulations on a terrific regular season. Your guys had one heck of a run so far this year.
Yeah, it's been a good group, and it's been a lot of fun. It certainly has flown by, so that's usually a sign that things are going on a positive note.
Without a doubt. Coach, I want to start with this. People that follow the Irish hockey team know last year they were the number 4 seed. They went up to Manchester, beat Minnesota, beat Lowell to get to the Frozen Four. This year, different situation as the number 1 seed. Do you coach this any differently psychologically, being the number 1 seed compared to being a number 4 seed last year?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing is, for me, the only thing that I needed to do was remind our guys that last year we were the number 4 seed and we knocked off the number 1 seed. And I think that, college hockey is so close that there's not a whole lot of difference between 1 and 16. In many cases, probably 1 and 30. The teams are all close for different reasons. Like the team we're playing this weekend, Michigan Tech, they're an experienced team. They've got an older team. And that balances things out. I mean, they've got some guys that have played there 2, 3, 4 years, and they played in the tournament last year under Mel Pearson, and Joe Sean's done a great job there this year, just trying to even make them better. And they probably would have finished higher in the WCHA had they not had so many injuries in the early stages of the season. But they got hot here at the end, and they've gotten really good goaltending over the last 2 or 3 weeks, and that certainly made them that much better. So we have to understand that a 4 seed and a 1 seed, there's the only difference is you get a nicer locker room.
That's true. Coach, along those lines, you have so many guys back from last year's team. So how does the feel of this year's team, how does it compare to last year's team, and how much difference do you hope maybe that experience makes going into this tournament?
Well, you hope that that our guys, the veteran players, step forward and make sure that some of the younger guys understand the distractions that happen during the NCAA tournaments between the travel and people asking for tickets and family and everything else that goes along with being in that environment. And then it gets magnified with media coverage and, so many people are running around the rink, representing the NCAA. And like I said, media is always a factor. So, last year I thought it became a distraction for us, both in the Hockey East Finals and also in the Frozen Four. So, this year you hope that the guys have been through that, so they have a better understanding what they're up against as far as distractions. And, you hope that they grow from it. This group, this year has been pretty resilient. I mean, they've played in some really tough venues, big crowds, and they've handled it really well. I mean, the only exception might be the game up at the United Center, but that was the end of our streak, and it was like a big gasp of air being let out of a balloon. So I think the most important thing is that our guys understand that, this is a work business trip, and we have to be prepared to be focused for, the next 48 hours after we get there.
Irish hockey coach Jeff Jackson, our guest here on WSBT, talking about the Irish in the NCAA tournament. And coach, just from my novice hockey knowledge, you look at a lot of teams and you can always pinpoint who their number one defensive pairing is. They're going to get a lot of playing time against, for example, the Evans line or the Ogilvy line. When I watch Notre Dame play and the way Paul Pooley handles the defensemen, I have a feel who the top pair is, but coach, I almost feel like with the experience and the depth of your defense corps, you may have a number one, but I almost feel like it's almost 1B and 1C. Is this as good of a group of defensemen depth-wise and execution-wise that maybe you've had at the University of Notre Dame?
Well, it certainly rivals the group back with probably Ian Cole Joe Lavin, Teddy Ruth, that group. Well, you know, we kind of lost and was back in that group. It wasn't Lavin, but, you know, we had a really good group back then as well, the first Frozen Four that we went to. But this group is probably a little bit more deep as far as what they bring to the table, you know, as far as offensive defensemen, defensive defensemen, the versatility of the guys that we have back there, the fact that we have seven of them that all play and contribute in different ways. You know, I think maybe in that way, it may be the deepest in their roles, more so than the depth of our defense. It may be the depth of our roles, where we have some really good offensive guys, some really good defensive guys, and we have some guys that are two-way guys. And it's a good balance of types of defensemen, which allows us to, you know, to utilize it in different ways. You know, we always try to pick spots to get our best offensive defensemen out with some of our offensive forwards. And, you know, defensive defensemen, sometimes if you're playing head-to-head against an opponent, you have to have them out there defending against one of your top lines, but with one of your top lines. But, you know, we also have the guys that are more versatile, that they can jump into the play and be effective offensively as well. So it's a nice thing to have. We better probably not get too used to it, because next year we'll probably be a lot younger back there. So take advantage of it while we have it.
Jeff, Cale Morris has obviously been such a big part of what your team has done this year. What were your realistic expectations for him coming into the year after losing a goalie as good as Cal Peterson after last year?
Well, I'm sure that there was some question marks. I mean, Cale hadn't played in a year. I was more concerned about that than, you know, we recruited him. We knew he was he's a full scholarship goaltender. You expect him to be a guy that can step in and play. And when we brought him in, I mean, he was brought in with the idea that, that he's going to be a starting goaltender at some point. And I thought that, you know, we brought in Dylan St. Cyr because you have to have a little depth back there. And frankly, I thought that Cale and Dylan would battle it out probably a little longer than they did. But Cale stepped forward, you know, and the credit goes to him specifically for, you know, how much he improved over the last year and having not played and, you know, having such a great attitude during that time frame that, you know, he once he got past that first month, I mean, he became a difference maker like Peterson was. So it was awful hard to take him out during that stretch that we were winning. And then it got to the point where every game had so much meaning at the end of the year that we kept playing him, you know. And he's a good athlete like Cal was, and, you know, he could certainly handle the minutes. So it was not a hard decision to just keep him in there. And, you know, he earned the opportunity. He sat behind Cal all last year, so he earned the opportunity to have that same, you know, chance to play regular.
Coach Jackson, looking back at the win over Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament title game, the opening 20 minutes was a terrific 20 minutes for your hockey team, building a 2-0 lead. Ohio State eventually tied the game with a goal early in the third period. And I know you've talked a lot about, and you hear hockey analysts talk about this, a two-goal lead is one of the more dangerous leads you can have in hockey, and Ohio State battled back from down 2-0. Is the second period and the early in the third period Saturday, can that be a learning experience for your team? And I don't know if you agree with this, but it almost felt like they got too conservative for a while protecting that lead. Am I right with that assessment, and how can they learn from that? Hopefully they'll have some two-goal leads over the next few games in the NCAA tournament.
Well, you know, I've hoped for years that kids knew how to play with a two-goal lead. Even in the National Hockey League, you watch two-goal leads disappear quite regularly. So, you know, it's almost human nature that you hate to nag them about it, but I mean, you come out with such great intensity. That was probably our best first period of the season. And, you know, we come out, we think, hey, maybe this isn't going to be quite as hard, and the opposing team is all, you know, that much more motivated to come out and get the next goal. And then all of a sudden, momentum becomes an issue, and it's hard to, you know, when that happens, it's hard to get the momentum back. I mean, you're already in a little bit of a hole emotionally, and then you go out there and they score, and then all of a sudden you feel pressure. So all of a sudden, you know, your mindset gets more defensive, and
and maybe a little bit more risky at times. So, you know, trying to get that next goal again. But, you know, hopefully we learn from it. We've had that happen a few times. It happened mm-hmm. at Penn State. It's just something that you have to make sure that you don't lose that intensity that you start the game with. And it's a hard thing to replicate having 24 hours, basically, to get yourself ready to play a game. And then you go in the locker room, and that all that mindset has changed because you got the two-goal lead. Hmm. And it's hard to get that back. As coaches, you can jump and yell, and you can do just about anything. And sometimes it doesn't matter. I mean, how many times did we watch the Irish basketball team this year be down by double digits and make a great run in the second half? It's the same thing, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, we look at it differently being Notre Dame fans, but I'm sure that the coaches from some of the teams that played Notre Dame, especially the one big game at the end of the year when they made that big run at the second half, you know, it's human nature, and especially with younger people, it's not hard for them to get comfortable. And as coaches, you can warn them, you can tell them, and, you know, like I said, you can do just about anything. And in a lot of cases, it has no value. I mean, it's just you have to go through it and hope that you can get the momentum back.
How important was it to win that Big Ten tournament after you win the regular season? How important was it to kind of finish off with that and win the tournament as well?
I think it was really important for us to play well in the playoffs because we had struggled a little bit down the stretch. And I think for us to have the game against Penn State and the game against Ohio State, obviously, they're both overtime games that could go either way. But the fact that they went in our favor gives us a little bit more swagger, a little bit more confidence going into the NCAA tournament as compared to maybe how we finished the season. So the bye week might have helped us more mentally than anything. And, you know, we got off to a good start against Penn State, and we got off to a good start against Ohio State. And we found a way to win both games. And that's kind of been the MO of this team all season long, is we find ways to win games that maybe some nights we don't deserve to. Other nights we win games maybe we deserve to, but, you know, we have to score a goal in overtime to win it. So, you know, it's been like this, you know, for the majority of the season. So those two games were not unusual for our team.
Coach Jackson, my final question for you. I was thinking about this earlier this week. In a calendar year in South Bend, hockey fans here will have witnessed a Big Ten regular season championship win on home ice, a Big Ten tournament championship win on home ice, this team going back to the NCAA tournament as a number one seed. Also coming up in a few months, the Winter Classic is going to be at Notre Dame Stadium, the Bruins and the Blackhawks, and you've referenced there's a very good chance there's going to be a Notre Dame outdoor game at Notre Dame Stadium. I just bring this up because diehard hockey fans 25 years ago, I don't think they could have imagined something like this happening, and obviously with you joining this program, taking it to new heights, you deserve all the credit for all this happening. Just your reflections on hockey fans, how it's really grown in this area because of Notre Dame hockey becoming an elite program and the Blackhawks getting good at the same time has obviously helped as well. But I almost feel like this is kind of the icing on the cake. This has been building for years, and the next 8 to 10 months is going to be really exciting for hockey fans in our area.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a fun ride for me as far as watching everything happen as it's happened. I mean, you know, when we first started over at the Joyce Center, clawing our way our second year, you know, having over a 31-year and getting to the NCAA tournament for the second time in program history, getting to the Frozen Four a year later, you know, I think that the building of the Compton Family Ice Arena was a huge part of our growth as a program. You know, we had some good success in the CCHA with regular season and playoff championships. And, you know, when we built the building, it was, you know, it was about every aspect of our program. It was about the recruiting. It was about the respect level of our program. It was about our fans. And certainly it was about our players.
That's Jeff Jackson, Notre Dame hockey coach. The Fighting Irish in action tomorrow at 3:00 NCAA tournament. You'll hear it with Darren Pritchett
on Z94.3 245 pregame. And Dirt will join us on Leprechaun Lunch tomorrow as well at noon. Budweiser's weekday sports beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. We've got Westwood One's coverage of March Madness on the way next. That is coming up tonight on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.